Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Brigitta Heller. Brigitta was 10 years old in the spring of 1945 when war came with a vengeance to her town of Magdeburg, Germany. She and her mother and her two younger sisters and her grandparents spent many a night huddled in a basement of her grandparents' restaurant supply business as the Allied bombing raids leveled their town and destroyed any chance of a German resurgence. Now, some 70 years later, these memories come roaring back, and Brigitta remembers that time as if it were yesterday. Here she reads from a story she wrote as a way of dealing with her childhood memories.
The shelling had stopped, finally. Artillery fire had started early that evening, coming from a neighboring village, and it had gone on and on. We were all in the basement of the house, the souterrain. My mother, my newborn sister, my sister Barbara, my grandfather and grandmother, with their housekeeper, and who had been with the family since before I was born. My grandparents had been bombed out and had come into the mountains, fleeing from our burning hometown. My mother's sister had arrived with her three children and her help. She was one of the countless sad and worn-out refugees from eastern Germany. We had spent the evening in the downstairs room, safer, we thought, than upstairs. Anna had cooked dinner on the stove downstairs, and we all sat around the big table and ate what we thought might be our last supper. For days, the German army had come past the house, walking up from the village, disappearing into the woods bordering the garden. They had stopped by the front gate where my mother stood with peppermint tea. It was sad for me to see so many faces go past on what I felt was a meaningless journey. Somehow I had dreamt that this was the very end. Several days later, they all came past again walking. They had been told there is no ammunition. Get home as safely as you can. It was devastating to see all the soldiers walk past, some of them not much older than I was then, with less hope than they had before, and not much more to eat than they had since we had seen them last. Two officers asked if they could stay the night, and my grandfather had told them they could have one of the upstairs bedrooms. They hung up their coats in the entry hall and went to sleep. When the shelling stopped past midnight, everyone else went to sleep too, and we all spent a cautious, restless night. Suddenly there was machine gun fire. I knew it right away. Such a different sound from the artillery, but I had never heard it before. Rat-a-tat, rat-a-tat, and again. Where could it be, and why? It was so close, and I was frightened. It sounded very real, and then it was quiet, much too quiet. Not a sound to be heard for hours. When day broke, there was a banging on the door, and again. Somebody answered, and I heard voices upstairs. The Americans had arrived with drawn guns. They had asked my mother if there were any other people than just family in the house, and she said, oh no. She had forgotten the army coats hanging in the hallway behind her. The Americans spotted them and demanded to know, where are the Germans? Without getting an answer, they stormed through the house until they came to the children's upstairs dormer bedrooms and kicked open the white lacquered door, found the officers, and took them away. The first day of American occupation was spent like most other days, trying to stay alive, cooking and taking care of the babies.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. And my guest today is Brigitta Heller. Brigitta is reading a story she wrote, recalling her childhood and the last days of World War II in her home near Magdeburg, Germany.
The next day, Anna took me for a walk. We walked behind the house into the most beautiful meadow one can imagine, bursting with the first spring flowers. We picked Himmelschlüsselchen, a lovely yellow flower, a primula, translated little key to heaven. We almost forgot everything around us, and we were so happy. We sang old songs that she had taught me, walked hand in hand, ran together, talked and joked. Never too far away from the house, and then we both had beautiful bunches of flowers, and Anna called out to me, "We have to go home, Gitta." I turned and stood. Close to the road now, dumbstruck, frightened, looking into the wide open pale blue eyes of a young man in uniform, right in front of me in the fresh light green grass, dead. My heart just stopped, and 10 feet from him, another one. Those machine guns I had heard 2 mornings before had been meant for them. I clutched my flowers close to my heart and went all the way home. Mutti, 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 Mutti. It must have been a week later when Anna and I went into the village to see if we could get some milk. We had so many ration stamps. 5 children, plus a baby, plus a nursing mother. Surely there must be something in one of the 2 dairy stores. We're lucky. Carrying our 4 liters of milk in 2 large aluminum cans, we decided to take the long way home, enjoying the beautiful spring day. We left the village and walked through the woods along a path that led us by the cemetery. We were almost home. Near the fence, there were 2 new graves, and a young woman was watering some flowers she had planted. I guess that must be the 2 young soldiers we had found in the meadow the other day. Anna struck up a conversation she had met the girl before, standing in line at the grocery store. "He was my fiancé," she said. The bombs had stopped falling, the guns were silent all over Europe, and suddenly it was summer. You know, every time I come to the end, I just fall apart.
You still carry the trauma of that time.
Yeah.
You were 10 years old. And
Yeah, I had just turned 10.
How has that experience, living in that kind of terror, how has that affected you in your life?
To be careful, you know, to, I think, I don't know exactly how it had affected me, but I'm sure it had. Yeah.
When you say it's made you careful, what, and how do you mean that?
Perhaps to cherish what I have. That life can be taken from you very quickly, anywhere, here, in Germany, anywhere.
Did it make you more cautious as a mother?
Yeah, in a way, perhaps I would have always been cautious as a mother, and perhaps I would always worry a little bit. You know, that's in the family. My grandmother was famous for her worrying all the time. And she would say, "My heart is so heavy."
Well, but you lived in a town that was totally decimated.
Yeah.
So there was plenty to worry about.
I didn't know. We didn't know what could happen.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. And my guest today is Brigitta Heller. Brigitta is describing the dangers that she and her little sisters faced while playing in her bombed-out city of Magdeburg, Germany, during World War II.
You know, everything was bombed out, right? And my mother was always saying to us, "Please, I know it is so tempting to go exploring into these bombed out buildings, but please be careful, because there were staircases halfway up you know. And some of, not really my friends, but brothers or cousins, boys, usually got into trouble because in 45, in the spring, when the armies were sort of disintegrating anyway, there was a lot of ammunition left over.
Yeah, I mean, there was dangerous things everywhere.
Yeah, and quite a few little boys lost an arm, a leg, you know.
So
it happened.
But you got to go out still and play, but...
Yeah, but you know what happened once? And I remember because Inge was just...
Your sister, right?
Yeah, was just a baby, so she didn't play with us. But Barbara and I... So if I was 9, she was 5. And we are making mud pies. You know, 9, 5 years old, we're
exactly.
making mud pies. And my mother looks out the window and she said, "What are you guys doing?" "We're making mud pies." And she said, "But what is the banging? You're banging something." And I said, "Well, we're taking these shells and we're putting them on the stone and we're banging them to get the powder out to make poppy seed cakes."
Oh, my
mother
God.
Just got dying.
Your mother's.
Yeah. Nobody had guns in the house. Hitler had taken them all away. You know, I didn't know anything about
Were you in the city when the city was bombed?
No, we were in the mountains, in the Harz Mountains. And I don't even know how far away we saw the city go up in flames.
Did it just so happen that you were out of town, or did you know it was...
No, that was on purpose. We were in our house, in the mountains, and... I think my mother would get bored or whatever, and we would go and visit Opa and Omi, right? And we were all in that great... That really saved everybody's life, this unbelievable air raid shelter that my grandfather had built underneath that big office building we
right.
owned. And we would be there the first night, and there would be another alarm, and... You know, the sirens would go and so on. And I will never forget my grandfather looking at my mother and saying, "Lottie, you're leaving tomorrow with the kids." And out we would go again. It was
so
just so dangerous.
He'd
you
send
know?
You away to the mountain.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
cottage that you had
yeah.
in the mountains.
Yeah.
How did your grandparents survive? They were in the...
They were in that air raid shelter.
In the shelter.
And it was big enough for some neighbors. They always came over too. And they said that they came out and they realized that everything was burning, that everything was gone. And they ran past the garages and they saw flames coming out of the garages. And they thought, well, now we can't even get out of town. But they went back the next day and there was one car that was okay. And that is the one they came to the mountains to us.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. My interview today is with Brigitta Heller. Brigitta's family is facing the end of the war. It's 1945, and the threat of occupation by the Russians of East Germany is imminent. Brigitta's family decides that it's time to leave, and they begin planning their escape.
And for 4 years, you know, while all this was going on, we knew that it wasn't going to change very quickly. And I think the adults in my family, my grandfather, who was sort of the boss, he arranged for my mother to leave Magdeburg, and it had to be really in great secrecy. Nobody knew. We children didn't know. You know, I had 2 younger sisters, and my mother and the 3 of us eventually moved, you know, fled to West Germany.
But first your mother?
my mother and my little sister. She was four. And it was all done in secret. Nobody knew. We children didn't know what was going on because it would have been very dangerous for my mother or for my grandparents, yes. You know. And what was going on then was my mother would pack up things that she thought would be of value, and she wanted to keep them. What she then did, she packed things into suitcases or boxes or I don't know, because I didn't see it. I was in school, you know. Yeah. And then we had a housekeeper at home, so we didn't really miss my mother. You know, she might be gone for a whole day or so. She would go to Berlin, and it was still in the Russian sector. And at that time, it was still possible to go with not many difficulties from the Russian sector into the American sector or British, whatever it was.
So there wasn't confines.
Yeah, I don't think there was Checkpoint Charlie and so on, yes, you know. Right. And she would go across, and we had friends in that part of Berlin then with a big apartment. And there she would take whatever she had taken out of the house, you know, in the suitcases, whatever, how she had gotten it to Berlin. Right. We didn't even know she was gone, which was wonderful, you know. But then it was all of a sudden a shock when she really disappeared. So anyway, she would go from Magdeburg to the Russian, of course, occupied part of Berlin, go across the border, go into the Allied sector. And at that time, the airlift was on. Thousands of American bombers were coming from West Berlin, from West Germany into Tempelhof, and unload coal, building material, food, medication. And on the way back into West Germany, they would take children. A lot of children were evacuated, and packages. But the packages couldn't be more than 2 kilos. So there were hundreds of packages that she packed. And, you know, from things that she thought were necessary or she didn't want to lose, packed from Magdeburg east to Berlin into the American sector, then with the bombers flown over to Frankfurt, where we had a friend who had a big warehouse. And eventually, the house was just about empty. Not wow. The furniture, not the carpets, not paintings and so on, but personal things. And that must have gone on for a whole year. And then on the 4th of January 1949, she took my little sister and my grandfather, who was very influential and could afford it, bribed border guards, and they took her across the border. And this is how she landed in West Germany with my little 4-year-old sister. And we stayed in Magdeburg in the house with a housekeeper. And then it was arranged that my grandparents would come and pick my sister Barbara and me up. And then I stayed for a few months with my grandparents and my sister with my great aunt and uncle.
So did anybody notice that your mother and your little sister was gone?
No.
So
I'm sure somebody did, you know, perhaps neighbors. Oh, where?
But the police or the authorities never.
No. And the housekeeper later on joined the police force, and she was always on our side. You know, she didn't turn anybody in.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. My interview today is with Brigitta Heller. It's 1949, and Brigitta's mother and grandparents have just spent the last 4 years planning an escape from Russian-occupied East Germany to Frankfurt in the West. Brigitte's mother has just left with her 4-year-old sister, and in a few months it will be Brigitte and her sister Barbara's turn.
That was a tough year.
In January of 49, how old were you?
14.
Yeah, so you were this
it was
young
a horrible
woman just becoming.
I think 14, 15, 16 is a terrible time for young people.
Well, it's a major transition time in your life, and to have this upheaval must have been
all
really hard.
All my friends, you know, and I couldn't keep in contact with them because it was dangerous. In fact, my mother then settled in West Germany near Frankfurt in the mountains with my little sister. And we had the address. We could write to her, but we would say, "Dear Aunt Lottie," not Mutti or Mother or whatever. And
so you weren't able to reveal that you were related to
right,
her as a mother and daughter.
And I would mail. I remember I would get on my bicycle and mail those letters in different parts of the city. You know, I was so afraid that somehow something would happen. Not to me, because I wasn't afraid for myself, because I was only, you know, 14 or 15, and 14, but to my grandparents.
Wow. So it was a time of major
upheaval.
Stress and upheaval. And
very, yeah.
So you remember being really frightened quite a bit of the time.
Uh-huh, yeah.
What did you do when you found your mother was gone that first?
When I think about it, it was a very snowy, stormy night, and it was thundering, which I had never heard before in the middle of winter, you know. And I wasn't afraid. I was concerned for her, and I wasn't concerned really about concerned for my sister Barbara or me, because I had my grandparents.
Wow.
Who were
sort
know,
of your,
just
your
everything.
Your family, any yeah, your parents.
Mm-hmm. I felt very safe. You know, I really did. Even though we hated the Russians.
Tell me why you hated the Russians.
Because they had taken over. You know, they nationalized factories and it was really a very, very difficult time for the adults. It was kept, at least from us children. We didn't really know that much. There were horrible things that had happened. You know, when we had wonderful teachers in that school, and a couple of them were still from my mother's time, and several disappeared.
Hmm.
They were taken away, and the story was then for denazification.
Denazification.
Mm-hmm. That they had been party members, you know. I mean, that was 45, 46.
When, so they were disappeared.
Yeah, they disappeared. You know, when you're 14 and your teacher disappears, you're not going to really spend an awful lot of nights worrying where he is and trying to find out. It's just safer not to.
Well, particularly in that time.
Yeah.
I mean, you knew.
Yeah.
So things were really repressive.
Yeah.
So when you left on 49, tell me about that day when you...
My uncle, Albert, had a permit to go to Berlin to pick up immigration goods in Berlin and two nieces. That was the permit. And he never went to Berlin. He stopped in Magdeburg. He picked us up. We knew he was coming. Babel and I had a suitcase, you know, and he took us across. No problem. No problem.
No.
On the train.
Huh.
Yeah.
So you weren't worried and...
No.
He didn't seem worried.
No,
he
was probably very worried.
I'm sure he was. It was probably really hard for him to look, just to remain calm. And That was Brigitte Heller. Brigitte finished school near Frankfurt, Germany, and then spent time in England, working as an au pair and perfecting her English. When she returned to Germany, she met André Ulrich, an American soldier, who was also a child refugee of the war. André had recently emigrated to the United States from Warsaw, Poland. Brigitte and André were married in the United States in 1958 and came to Aspen with their three children in 1966, where they eventually opened André's, one of Aspen's iconic restaurants. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. For more on immigrant stories, please go to our website, immigrantstories.net. Thanks for listening.